This podcast is part of the Game and Entertainment Network. Visit tgenetwork.net to find the latest episodes from all our shows.
I'm sorry, are you sure this is the podcast you were looking for? Really? Okay then. Welcome to the Pixels and Dice Podcast. Every week, our sad little team discusses gaming in various forms, make stupid wisecracks, and generally embarrass themselves quite well with their so-called expert opinions. Remember, you did this to yourself.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Scormus.
And I'm Bayless.
And today, since at least when we're recording this, not a whole lot of news going on in gaming other than what we covered a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, got us thinking, we should talk about role-playing games, shouldn't we?
Oh, most definitely. One of my favorite subjects.
Yes, and you came up with a very interesting subject. So, why don't we start talking about it?
Okay, well, you know, we've done shows where, you know, how to be a better DM, you know, pitfalls to avoid, you know, that sort of thing. How not to be a dick as a player or as a game master, that sort of thing. You know, we covered all kinds of topics, but we never really talked about the meat of the game, the hook, you know, something to really get the players invested. And that's the NPCs. Most often when I'm in a game, the NPCs are pretty generic, pretty throwaway. There's really nothing special about them. So the game really doesn't have a lot of, you know, grab you and, you know, get your attention kind of feel to it.
Right.
And that's kind of sad. I've always thought, you know, if you're going to make a game, try and make the NPCs interesting. Because they're what your players interact with. They're the crux of either getting the information across or just being, you know, the villain that they have to get past or have to take out or whatever.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, basically, yeah. On some people, they'll focus so much on their world and detail. Oh, it's going to, you've got all this great fitness and fantastic cities and these, they work on the maps and they do all this stuff. And then they don't actually do anything with their characters, with the NPCs, and it's all bland. And so you can have the most beautiful maps. You can have the most wonderful cities detailed and all ready to go. And nobody gives a damn.
Well, that's kind of like, you know, you buy this magnificent mansion with marble, you know, everywhere. It's gorgeous. And there's not a damn stick of furniture in the entire thing.
Exactly.
You've got to flesh it out. You've got to have NPCs that matter.
Mm-hmm.
They have to matter as much as the story itself.
Sure.
Or the game just, it's not going to flow. The players aren't going to be interested. They're not going to give a shit. You know, you see all these memes and these, you know, stories where I spent all this time building this great adventure and blah, 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 blah. And the players all went to the tavern and drank the entire adventure. They bar fought. They did this. They did that. Sure. That's because you didn't have anything to get their attention, to get them into the game. So,
yeah, it's like basically, oh, you have this great adventure of, you know, you're sending them up to fight against the evil wizard in the tower up on the hill. He's, you know, he and his monsters are threatening the town and everybody's, you know, in peril and blah, 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 blah. We'd rather go off over this way and go investigate the haunted woods because that looks at least a little more interesting than generic evil wizard 165,000.
Yes, but if that evil generic wizard had a backstory that talked about, you know, the crushing loss of his entire family or how he was cursed and driven insane by this curse.
Sure.
Now, and so instead of killing this big bad wizard, they actually, you know, go about finding what cursed him and breaking the curse instead.
And maybe, since he lost his family, maybe he's slowly, night by night, children are disappearing from the town. And the townspeople assume that they're being, you know, kidnapped and held or sacrificed. Oh, the evil wizard up on the tower, he's threatening, and oh, it's all nasty, and he's just so dangerous, and maybe, in fact, he's taking them to keep them safe from the true threat that's us coming for the town, and he's been snagging these children before some evil fairy can steal them from the woods and take them off and leave a changeling behind. Perhaps the town is actually being run by changelings, and over decades, these children have been being replaced little by little here or there, and he's trying to actually save them. But you don't know that until you go up there and you investigate, and it's all a misunderstanding. But that's at least that's more memorable than Evil Wizard 126,000.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine to rely on tropes. Tropes are there for a reason. Tropes work. Oh, yeah. But
I used the trope of the swashbuckling pirate captain who ran the airship that got the players from point A to point B, and, you know, basically was their taxi driver.
Yeah.
Through a good portion of my Pathfinder adventure.
Oh, let's be honest. He was our fixer.
He got you jobs. He got a small percentage, okay, well, more than a small percentage of the money, but it got the story moving.
Yes.
He didn't have to be overly interesting because I didn't use him any more than just as a point of reference.
But as a player in that campaign, I can tell you that I know every single person on around that table was going, this guy is going to become an important character at a certain point in this adventure. And when he got kidnapped, when he and others were taken, were captured,
mm-hmm.
we were like, ding, now we're getting into the meat of this.
Yep.
Because everybody assumed it was just a matter of time that he was going to become a central focus of the game. He wasn't just going to be the guy who took us from here to there or set us up on jobs and, you know, help just get rid of loot, that sort of things that, you know, we couldn't pass through legal channels, you know?
Well, for the most part, he was just getting rich off of your threatening your own lives. But yeah, he had more significance. We just never got a chance to get farther into that.
I wouldn't mind if a character like him showed up in, eventually, when it's appropriate, in our current D&D campaign, actually.
Well, there are going to be characters like that. I've got three more adventures already done, and I've got the next one I'm working on. And there are plenty of characters that I want you to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't really get into it right now because I don't want to spoil it.
Well, sure. But when I'll just, for an example, when I started that Pathfinder campaign, it was meant to be a shared campaign. I started off and did the first several adventures, and then you took over, and eventually our friend up in Portland ran a couple games, and before it petered out. But the point is, I set a stage. Here's this kingdom. Here is the ruling king and some other characters from the noble family that you got acquainted with, one central NPC that you were, was part of the group that I ran when I was running the game, that I ran as a extra character because you needed him. And basically I had, okay, here's a kingdom. It's got, you know, I had a central idea of how the layout was. Here's the central town. I didn't even focus on a map for it at all. I was all about characters, all about here are people you need to remember, you know? Mm-hmm. And yes, I didn't get into super mannerisms and stuff, but there were things I was thinking about doing if you had gotten more involved with the extended family under, you know, the king, all the various princes and princesses. Because as you recall, the character I was running was sixth in line for the throne. He was basically the prince that no one gave a damn about. He was a throwaway.
Right.
And I tried to have some mannerisms for him that was basically of a, he was trying to earn the respect of his brothers and his father.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, fight for the kingdom and things like that, because he had nothing else. And part of that I took from an actual real person in life, Prince Harry of Britain. He is not as his older brother and his, well, quote unquote, father, are further in line to the throne, and his brother's children are now in line for the throne before he is. He's never going to sit the throne. It's just not going to happen. But he fought in Afghanistan. He's tried, you know, worked in various charities and whatnot, and done everything he can to better the lives of his countrymen.
Yeah.
And he's noble. He is a noble character. So I took some of those ideas and baked it into my NPC. And it worked.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he was a memorable character without even having to do any extra mannerisms and stuff. Because a lot of game masters will focus on, okay, I've got this NPC, this Baron, he's got a lisp. This one, he has only one eye, and he won't talk about where he got the scar that he lost his eye. Or maybe you've got one that's got a crippled arm, and all he does is talk about the ways that he had his arm injured. And he maybe drinks a little too much, and the story changes. It's a different type of monster. Every time, you know, says it's a griffin. To this person, to another person, it was a manticore. To another person, it was a rampaging orc. Doesn't matter. Every time he changes his story.
That's great and all, but it needs to be more than just mannerisms, you know, little things. You need to have a story behind them. You have to have something interesting about the character.
Right.
Yes, there's going to be throwaway NPCs. We just don't have the time to be that detailed on every single, you know, NPC they run across.
Yes. That's why we use tropes for okay, here is generic fishmonger. You're going to the fishmonger to buy fish because you need fish to do whatever. So the fishmonger is a fishmonger. Nobody gives a shit about the fishmonger.
Yes, but the fishmonger's son, who has this little tidbit of information that completely changes the course of the adventure. You better damn well believe that kid has a story behind him. There's something interesting. There has to be something interesting about it. Otherwise, no one's going to listen to the damn kid with the information that changes the course of the adventure.
Well, here's an example how we could use this. Just let's say something happened down near the pier or off the river. There's a river that runs right beside this city. And so, you know, the fishmonger, he was down. You've heard that he was down getting fish from the fishermen at about the time this thing occurred. So you're going down to talk to him, maybe as a witness.
Right.
But he's, you know, not of any help. He's just a surly old guy and who insists you buy fish. But maybe one of the characters on, you know, as in for 5th edition, you have the, that baked in, what's the word I'm thinking of for notice?
Perception?
Yeah, the passive perception check. Okay, so you can use that, and one of the characters with a higher passive perception notices that off over, maybe off to the side, there's a kid who's fixing some nets. And he keeps looking at you. And he seems a little nervous and whatnot. And when they go around, he kind of, you know, slips off behind. So they go, the building, so they go and follow. And turns out the kid was actually the one that was down there. They don't buy from the fishermen. He had gotten rolled by some other kids that took the money. So he went and caught fish on his own. And he was down there gathering fish. That's why he was late to bring back the fish and got in trouble from his father. He didn't want to tell him what had occurred. He actually saw everything. Just a little thing like that. Just something that you could throw in. Is this a throwaway little notice that may not even work? Maybe they don't notice it. Maybe they push a little harder, though. It gives room for a role-playing situation to work out the problem. Maybe eventually with intimidation, they can get the fishmonger to admit he was never down there. He sent his son, and he calls his son over and, you know, grabs him by the ear and makes him tell his tale.
Well, there's that. But then there's also using the same scenario. A noble was killed down by the docks.
Ooh, his body was found down off the, just laying in the river halfway.
And so you're sent down to investigate. And everybody says that, you know, the fishmonger was down there. So maybe he saw something. So you go down, you talk to the fishmonger. And you, the fishmonger just doesn't have any information. He's not helpful at all. But yeah, you have evidence that he was down there. You know, he's got something like a ring. He, you know, there was a ring that he found and he was, you know, he was wearing it. So he fesses up that he know he wasn't down there, that his son was down there, and his son came across this ring and brought it to him. And that ring happens to be magical, and it is the people who killed the noble are after it.
Ooh.
You know, and this leads into a whole new thing, because if you hadn't have, you know, figured this out, what would have happened? The bad guys would have come, wiped out the fishmonger, probably everybody in the nearby vicinity, and taken the ring and disappeared. And
that would have been that.
That would have been that. Yeah, exactly.
I can actually explain.
Now you get a hold of that ring, and it leads you towards the big baddie.
Right.
Because the ring has this map in it or something. You know, there's some hook to it.
But actually, I can actually expand upon that. The way you found out that it was the fishmonger is that while investigating the corpse, some people notice, oh, well, his, you know, jewelry and whatnot had been taken. Perhaps the hand that had that ring on it had been completely cut off. Who knows? Maybe the fingers have been removed, whatever. But nearby, one of the fishmonger's nets was found entangled in a tree, haphazardly. Maybe the kid had been down there with his nets and was gathering them up, and when he saw what was happening, he ran away, leaving one of the nets behind. That leads the bad guys, when they have noticed it, they're like, they're going to wait for nightfall to go and come after the fishmonger, but you arrived first.
Yeah.
Or the team, I should say. And again, you can, you know, not have to flesh out the, you know, it's generic fishmonger. Nobody cares about the fishmonger. You can just, with a basic, he's gruff, you know, he's lived a hard, grizzled life. You know, and everyone immediately can think in their mind, okay, you know, maybe, you know, not elderly, but older than he seems. You know, maybe he's only in his late 30s, but man, he's had a hard life. His skin is worn and, you know, like leather from being working in the sun with the, you know, fishing, but, you know, and his hands are, you know, grizzled, but he is strong and he's not going to take any shit. But his son, maybe he's a little smarter. Maybe he wants to be something more than just another fishmonger. And this is where they butt heads. So he does his, you know, tries to do his work early so that he can go off and learn, so he can go and become, make something of himself. Maybe be a, you know, get into a trade. Maybe be a soldier. Who knows?
Yeah.
You could add so many things to this character, and then this becomes a central point for several adventures. Maybe you have to take this kid with you and flee the city.
One of the NPCs that I particularly enjoyed from a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember who ran the game, but basically we had this knight. And this knight was, I mean, his armor was magnificent. He was handsome. He was strong. He had, you know, he had the ear of the king, kind of influential.
Right.
And so he was tasked with gathering up some heroes to go out and slay the dragon. And as you progressed, you got to know more and more about the knight. Whenever, you know, it came to actually fighting, he was either late to the fight or he never quite got involved. I mean, he might kill a goblin here or there. Or he might, you know, do something sort of helpful, but generally he's not very reliable. And as we went along, we discovered that, you know, as a knight, he sucks. You know, he swings and misses more often than he actually hits. You know, he's doing stupid things like, you know, instead of protecting the healer, he's rushing off to kill something that isn't really a threat right now. And you come to find out that his title was bought and paid for by his dad.
Yeah.
You know, his dad was a merchant, but he wanted to be more. He had these grand dreams of being, you know, in the noble court. And so he spent his money buying a title for his son, just so he could live vicariously through his son. And his son was charismatic enough to actually, you know, get in high with the nobility, and it just kind of snowballed from there. But he's has no real fighting skills. His armor, magnificent, but it's not very good quality armor. It's just pretty. And he's a coward. He is a stone-cold coward. If he's faced with any kind of real threat, he pees himself and runs. You know, you give him any kind of a chance to bail on somebody, he'll take it. As long as, you know, he's not the one dying, he'll leave you to whatever fate there is.
But he's charismatic enough to make the winds, the battles all seem to have been, basically, he was the true hero.
Well, and because his tale has been told so many times, people are more likely to believe that he's responsible instead of all these lowly adventurers.
Right.
So it doesn't matter that he ran away. All they know is that, you know, Sir Whatever saved the day.
Well, how dare these lowly peasants claim that a nobleman ran from the battle when he has such prestige and such this history of, oh, he's done this and, oh, he's done that. Of course, he was the true hero. And they more likely were the ones who run away. You don't deserve to get paid. Leave the town before we throw you in irons.
Yeah.
That's sort of fun. And that, right there, little injustices, little things like that. Again, with fully trope-laden characters, but linchpinned upon one character who wasn't what he seemed. That's adventures that players will remember for years.
What made it so interesting is the fact that it, over the course of many adventures, it started to develop. Mm-hmm. Because you didn't... Everybody, when they first met him, he was impressive. The stories, everybody knew the stories. When he came wandering in, 6'4" frame, this, you know, huge shoulders kind of thing, he literally took your breath away. Kind of, wow, you were in the presence of, you know, a star kind of thing. And then that tarnish starts to show.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse. Until by the end of it, people were plotting his murder. Because we're doing all this work, and he's getting all the credit, and we wanted to, you know, come on, man, somebody notice that we're doing all the work here. So eventually, we got him down deep in this dungeon, and the mage said, I'm done with this shit. And dimension doored and took everybody but him.
Oh,
we
nice.
Couldn't go back to that realm because they assumed we murdered him because he never came back. I have no idea what happened to him, whether he survived or not. I kind of doubt he survived, but we just bailed on his ass.
But see, here's actually just playing off of that idea. Let's say this was over 10 sessions. So we're talking, y'all, several months of play before it gets to that point. Maybe even 6 months worth of play before it gets to the point where he gets abandoned in this evil, horrible, nasty dungeon, right?
Right.
And the players go on about their business. They don't go back to that realm. They know that, you know, they either would have assumed dead along with him, or if he were to show up, they'd go, where is he? And would be thrown in irons, because how could they have returned when the hero didn't, right? You'd have to have a bard around to spin a great tale of how he died heroically, and they only barely escaped, and that's why they, you know, they had to be healed, and, well, you know, they'd have to really pull their butts out of the fire on that one, do some fast talking. But let's say they don't return, and they go off about their adventures, and a couple years later, he comes back. But now he's hell-bent on destroying them because he had to ingratiate himself with the monsters and the evil mage that was insane and running that dungeon. But he's charismatic, as you said. And he was able to ingratiate himself, basically had was enslaved, but eventually ingratiate himself and got to be a point where eventually they were, you know, tolerated him and thought, okay, he's reasonable enough that we can, you know, ransom him off or do something, get rid of him because he's useless to us, but they let him go. And now he is hellbent on ruining the team.
Yeah.
Finding ways to entrap them or blame, you know, get them blamed for murders or whatever, because he was driven insane. So that's one way that could go. These characters, I used to run a demi-lich that came back like 9 different times. Everyone was like, seriously, didn't we destroy this guy? Not completely. Liches are hard to kill. And oh,
yes, he was the Ultron of the D&D world.
Just kept coming back. I got bored with him eventually. And eventually you threw his platinum skull, which he had a platinum skull, into a volcano. We're like, all right, fine. If his head was basically an artifact, fine, he's gone. Until I brought him back for yet another adventure years later. But totally different group. It was just, yeah, I'm good with running this cackling maniac again. The point being here, although, is that if you're going to be a game master, it doesn't matter if it's D&D, doesn't matter what game you're playing. You can focus on details, you can focus on your maps, and you can, you know, the story, that's all great. But you have to have very memorable characters. Maybe only a couple to start with. But every adventure's got to have a couple characters or monsters or opponents that they run into that are linchpin focus point characters that aren't just, it's another orc. No, this is such and such the orc. He has a name. He's smarter. He's not going to do, okay, here come the orcs, and we slice them down. Instead, he runs an ambush. He's smarter. He's intent on catching you because you've got that ring. And he's heard about it. Now there's multiple groups coming after that ring.
Right.
They want that boy. The boy's got the ring. And, you know, there's just, you got to come up with something about this orc that makes him different, that makes him memorable. Even if it's just something that's funny. Like we were talking in the, or not even funny, but we were talking in the pre-show about, I was talking about, you know, there's always generic barons that, oh, okay, you go see the king and the king says he needs you to go fight the dragon. Okay, you'll be given this much money or jewels or whatever. Hand to the princess, whatever, go off, do your thing. Nobody cares. The king said go kill the dragon. The king. It's not king such and such. It's the king. The players don't care. They were just told, go kill dragon. So that's what they go do. Fine. That could be an adventure. Or you could have Baron Largo. Baron Largo is a very reclusive baron. Nobody ever sees him. He hasn't been seen in 20 years by the general public. He only interacts with a very few people, his steward and the treasurer and a few other people, the captain of the guard. They don't even talk about him. They, together as a team, he tells them what he wants done, and they, in general, run the barony with their various jobs. And that's fine. Everyone interacts with them. But for some reason, the steward and the captain of the guard have sent for you to go speak to the Baron. Baron Largo wants to speak with these adventurers. He has a very specific and secretive meeting, a secretive mission for you. And it involves his nephew, who is off doing whatever. He never wanted to be interested in being the heir because he hasn't done any children of his own. And the nephew isn't interested in being the heir. But he's a drunkard and a sloth. But he needs to come back because the Baron fears his health is weakening. And when you're meeting with him, you can't actually see him. He sits behind veiled curtains. You can see a form sitting on cushions who keeps moving around like he's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And there's something wrong with his voice. It's just kind of raspy and a little lispish, which would require a little acting on the part of the Game Master to kind of come up with a voice. But you'd only have to do it for like 5 minutes or so. But just these little mannerisms that, if they're smart, if they've got perception, maybe they've got certain skills that allow them to go, hey, they know a little bit about health and, you know, medicine. This guy may have leprosy or was in a horrible accident and has been disfigured. That would explain a few things, especially why he doesn't have an heir.
Well, yeah.
But they need to go get him. And now you don't, it's not just another Baron who wants you to go out and get his feckless heir. No, now it's a guy that you care about. This guy cares about his barony. He wants the best for it, and he fears that his heir isn't going to be there to take over. And then what happens? Who takes over when he dies?
Okay, but there's also a play on that. As the DM, once you've set this NPC, now you get to decide by the way you play it, how the players perceive him. Because it doesn't take much to push the players the other direction.
Sure.
Instead of him being this benevolent and, you know, wonderful ruler who's only trying to do what's best for his barony. No, that raspy voice. Someone gets to thinking that maybe he's no longer among the living, dead.
Or he's
a vampire.
Yeah. Well, just in my job, I answer phones and radios a lot. I used to work with a guy who was on a different shift, but he had a very sort of voice. It was very rough and raspy. And the thing is, he'd answer the phone and be perfectly nice. But he sounded like he was being a... He had this, you know, it always sounded very intimidating. So there was constantly people complaining, hey, this guy was really rude to me on the phone. And they'd go and listen to the tapes. The management would, and they'd go, nah, that's just him. He's, you know, his voice is just a thing. But it didn't help that right from the start, people had a negative impression of him. Every single time he talked to them, even if he tried to joke around, it still came off as, I'm being a dick to you. I don't want to talk to you. Get off my phone. Meanwhile, we had other people that could be nice as can be that were totally being dicks, but they came off as totally nice. It's all in how you are perceived, like you said.
But that's one of the nice parts about being the Game Master is... you get to lead the players by adjusting how they perceive the scenario. You know,
play on their own prejudices.
I've known a couple instances where, you know, I've caused paladins to murder good creatures because they didn't do any research. They just, you know, this is a bad monster. Kill it.
Yeah, as one of those paladins that fell, fuck you! That was rude!
I never told you they were a threat.
I'm sorry. We've been being attacked in this dungeon. There's all those caverns and whatnot. There's dark caverns and shadows everywhere. We've been being attacked constantly. We're fighting our way through. We come to the thing and this comes, this form, this tentacled floating form comes out of the darkness. I can't see it very well, except for I see a glint off of what may be an eye. And yes, I was young, and yes, I was stupid, and yes, I thought Beholder and opened fire, and it was a flumpf.
Yes.
Which are lawful good.
Good, helpful creature.
Yep, it was coming to help us out.
Yep. You had Detect Evil, you just didn't use it.
Right. Now, I didn't lose my paladinhood over that.
No.
But it was a close thing, and, you know, it took much atonement. You seem to like doing the whole making me have to do much atonement.
I'm sorry, that was hysterical, though.
Yeah.
I didn't actually think you were going to attack it.
Yeah. I was 16, and you'd, somewhere along the line, I'd end up in power armor. This was in D&D, by the way.
Yes, but, yeah.
Keep on the Borderlands, I believe, is the module where you can get power armor something from like Gamma World. And I had it. So I had lasers. And the paladin shot lasers at a flump. I believe it's called a flump.
Yes.
Yeah. It was not the Beholder I expected it to be. But anyway, yeah, that's playing upon the prejudices and the fears of your players. Watch what's going on with them. Are they feeling bedraggled? Are they feeling like they're being, they've been, you know, under siege? Are they going to react in a bad way? But do you want to do that too much? You're not their enemy. You're there to entertain them.
No, you're not. But a lot of times, players go into an adventure, and they have this silly notion that the game master is there to guide them to victory. When in reality, the DM's job, or GM's job, is nothing more than to run the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to them to decide whether or not they succeed or they walk into this hideous death trap. Because almost every adventure I make, there is the chance for someone to die. And could be the whole group.
Well, there should be real consequences in every adventure. Otherwise,
I have no problem with playing with the perceptions of the group. Because if you've got an NPC like that Baron who seems nervous because he's shifting around a lot and he's unwilling to show his face.
Yeah.
And nobody's seen him for 20 years. You know, that screams monster to some players.
Well, it screams something is wrong. And why does he want his nephew brought back? What does he really intend to do?
And so it's kind of like what happened with our tiefling cleric.
Yes.
It doesn't take much to shift their perception from, I'm a healer, I can save this man, to, he's too far gone. Kill him.
And then sock gets shoved in the throat, and the suffocation occurs.
But, you know, that's the whole point of this. You have NPCs that keep them interested, that give them options on how the game's going to go by how they perceive this.
Right.
And yes, if you've got a plan for them to, you know, talk to this Baron and he's a nice guy and he's just doing the best for what's best for his family and for the barony. But one of the players goes, but why won't he show us his face? I think there's something wrong here. And you don't quell that, you know, that odd idea that pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the whole adventure takes a completely different spin. And this nice Baron is now branded villain.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they may not, you know, get in a whole bunch of trouble by, you know, killing somebody who they really shouldn't. But, you know, I love the fact that you have all these options that you can do to make the game interesting.
Well, sure. But let's bring us back around to the start of the show when we were talking about the quote-unquote evil wizard up in the tower, right?
Right.
And we talked about how maybe he's a good guy and he's been trying to rescue children before the evil fae can switch them out for changeling. Fine. But we had talked about before that, you'd said, okay, well, the players want to go, instead of go and do the adventure you worked on, they're bored, so they go to the tavern for fighting and drinking and, you know, debauchery. Or, as I had said, maybe they go off into the dark woods to go adventure there, because that seems more interesting than your evil wizard X in Tower Y. Right?
Right.
So they do that. And while they're doing that, they run into a group of fae who befriend them and tell them that they've been hiding in these dark woods because the evil wizard has been trying to kill them and has been stealing children and is trying to wipe out this, you know, the fae because, you know, they're a threat to his power. So they've been in hiding and could you please, please help them? And they've got such nubile, pretty nymphs there that, oh, sure, the guys that just wanted to go and fight in the bar, they're like, oh, yeah, sure, okay, we'll go kill this guy for you.
Mm-hmm.
Dooming all those children, maybe they even send some fae with you to help out. Dooming all those children that he's been helping. Because, of course, they'll rescue those children. You guys go fight the wizard. We'll help get these children out of here. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And just playing on their perceptions. That's, again, just little things you can do with an NPC. Just the way the players perceive them. Because they'll, you know, it's a standard of, you know, humanity. When you see a pretty face, you assume them to be good. When you see a grizzled and older face, people tend to rate that more negatively. Like the fishmonger.
Right.
Maybe the fishmonger's a totally nice guy, but he comes off as gruff and grizzled and old and, you know, he's just, you know, hard to work with and nobody likes him and, you know, he's abusive to his child. Everyone thinks the worst of him, but he's a perfectly reasonable dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, you know, he assumes the worst from everybody berating him constantly. So yeah, that's one of the fun things about being a game master is you have total control over what the players perceive because you describe everything, not just the setting, but the player, all the non-player characters they interact with, and a slight change in how you portray any character, any NPC, can make a huge difference in that game. From a baron sitting crippled behind his curtains, he's just, you know, trying to, you know, spare people the horror of looking at him,
right,
to the beautiful and terrified fae in the dark wood. Just little things, man.
Yep. That's one of the things. I wish more people who play D&D and role-playing games would understand the joy that comes from actually running the game, not just playing in the game. Playing in the game's great and all.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to be said about being the one pulling the strings. Being the one who, you know, plans these things out. And there's a lot of satisfaction that comes from running the show and making the players or helping the players take the game in a completely different route.
Sure. But it's not for everybody either.
No. No, it's not.
A lot of people go, I want to be a game master, and they don't get it. And so they just jump into it and think they know what they're doing, but then they feel like, oh, I'm just going to drag people along through my adventure. Point, you know, very linear. And that doesn't work either.
Yeah, I'm not having fun because nobody's doing what I wanted them to.
But you totally can make them, quote unquote. You can encourage them
go that direction.
To do exactly what you want them to do just by the, you know, the wizard up on the tower needs to be investigated. And when you speak with him, oh, you realize that the problem is down in the town or the fae in the woods, who you could actually get that from speaking to the most beautiful barmaid in the bar when they decide they're going to go to the bar instead of that dreary old tower. They go to the bar, they've had a few drinks, and this barmaid is, she looks worried. And they finally was like, oh, what's wrong? And she explains how, you know, there's this, she befriended some fae in the woods, and they're terrified, and they really could use your help. So you sneak off that night without anybody else noticing in the town so that it doesn't get word up to the evil mage. And that's how you end up meeting with them. And it's a totally different adventure.
What could help reinforce that is the fact that the guards have this draconian rule that no fae are allowed within the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's elves or half-elves within the party, they are not allowed in the city.
Ooh, yeah. Again, little things.
It's just little things like that. It can shade the perception and make the players do something completely out of their character because they think they're doing what's good, even though they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, hey, in the middle of the adventure, if it's more fitting that the guy in the tower be the bad guy and everything, then fine, just roll with it. Just mm-hmm. change your story as you're going. You know, if you don't want to, you know, like, it really hurt when my mom, she had this ability, her lawful good fighter had this ability to shape change at will.
Oh, yeah.
And so a fight starts and she shifts into dragon form. Boom. She forgot she was still mounted at the time and killed her horse.
A horse she had named and cared very much for.
The sadness on her face was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so she spent a good amount of her fortune having the horse brought back to life and healed up. And she was so sad because the horse wouldn't have anything to do with her anymore because of what she did. So she let it loose in the forest. I didn't have the heart to tell her that a wyvern was not too far away and decided to snack on the horse.
But
better that way.
If she had just, you know, brought in a horse trainer and worked with the horse, she would have been able to fix the relationship
broken
with
trust.
The horse. But again, she was emotionally invested. She was sad, and I got to be honest, that wasn't a very nice thing to do to mom. But, you know, it was also years later, she remembered talking about those adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember before she started to fade to dementia, she still would talk about those games. And that was, you know, one of the cool things is that, you know, before the end, she still had some recall of it.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of spiffy.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's just it. One of our earlier shows was about family-friendly cooperative games.
Yes.
And we didn't mention D&D at all. We should have.
Yes, but Froon had specifically requested board games.
I know. But this is, you know, one of the originals, family-friendly cooperative games.
One could argue that D&D is not necessarily family-friendly. There's a lot of violence, there's demons, and some pretty scary monsters and whatnot.
Only if you let it.
Yeah. Again, if you have a good game master, you can turn that into a very, very family-friendly game. Just chopping out the monsters that are not necessary. That you only want to stay with the goblins and orcs and things like that that aren't super scary or don't, you know, bother your religious beliefs, things like that. That all works. So
yeah.
I don't know.
You have anything else?
No, and we're almost an hour in pre-edit. So the thing is, we were talking, oh, should we do a third show in this setting? Yeah, sure, but what do we talk about? Let's talk about some role-playing stuff. And it just went from there, and that's the thing. You get us talking about role-playing, we can go forever, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So, I like this, though. I like the idea where we, you know, occasionally just toss out an idea and, you know, do our advice, our take. I'm sure there are other game masters out there that will go, you know, I would have talked about this, or I would have, you know, suggested that. And you guys know we have comments, right?
Exactly. If you've got a show you want us to do, please say something. We'll do our best to cover your topic.
In fact, the show is now hosted at scoreme.com, which is where I have, it's my personal site for my live streaming and whatnot, and gamingstuff.website just failed hard. So I figure let's move the podcast over to a more straightforward website that's more focused. And so you can always drop comments on any of the shows there. You can leave us, and actually, it would be very helpful if people would go to iTunes, look up Pixels and Dice Podcast. It's in the gaming and hobbies section. And leave a review, a 5-star review, and leave a comment about the show. Oh my God, super helpful. It would actually get our show seen by more people on iTunes. You can do the same thing on Stitcher and on Google. I think we're on Google Music there and Stitcher Radio. But just, if you're interested, leave a review. We could really use the help. But yeah, primarily on iTunes would be awesome, because I think that's where we get most of our traffic. I'm not sure, but anyway, interacting with us would be awesome. Plus, we still have the Facebook page for Pixels and Dice. Mm-hmm. You can go to Scormus the MMO Troll, which is just facebook.com/Scormus, and I'm posting the shows there. Also, because now it's been moved over. Also, Twitter, if you hit us up at the MMO Troll.
Right.
I would love to interact with you there. Bayless doesn't do the social media stuff because he's lame.
I do Facebook, and that's about it. Right. Why? Because on Facebook, I don't get a lot of, you know, I don't interact a lot. I don't care for people.
Yeah. Well, that's your personal Facebook, too, so I wouldn't hand that out. But you can interact with him at Pixels and Dice on Facebook.
Oh, yes.
So, and you can always drop by Scormus the MMO Troll on Facebook, too. Maybe he could drop by there. So, if you leave him a comment at either of those places, I'll tell him to get on there and respond. How's that?
Of course.
Anyway, point is, we should make you a specific Facebook page, so you can have your own fan page.
Fans.
But anyway, also, before we go, just, you know, I know we're sitting here e-begging, but tell your friends about the show. If you like what we're doing here, tell your friends, pass on word. If you got it on if you're on any social media, just let people know. That'd be very helpful. Just passing on a link to the show would be great. Or just scoreme.com. Letting people know it's out there. I would really appreciate it. I'm sure Bayless would too, because we've really seen a rapid drop-off in the last few months when people realized, is Rylea coming back or not? And to be honest, I don't know. She's very, very busy. Like we've said, we've mentioned that many times, and I'm sure she would like to come back and be on the show again, but work comes first. Life comes first. We've always told her that. So,
yep.
That said, if you're interested in being on the show, we would not mind a third permanent co-host. So, you can always contact us about that if you have a background in gaming of various types, and we can always get on the Discord server and just talk and see what happens. No guarantees, but hey, you know, anything else?
No, I just had this idea and I thought it would be a good one to talk about, and it did good.
Seems to have blown up. But next week we won't be talking about role-playing games.
No.
Probably. We try not to do 2 weeks in a row on the same topic. But till next time, I'm Scormus.
And I'm Bayless.
Generic catchphrase ending.
Wow, you actually listened to the whole episode? I'm frankly shocked, and have lost a little bit of respect for you, to be honest. But since you are obviously a glutton for punishment, why don't you drop by our new website, scoreme.com? It can't be a much bigger time waster than this podcast has been, can it? Actually, yes, it totally can, but check it out anyway.